Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Paddock Project. Joining me today are Holly and Sarah, F1 journalists and hosts of the BBC's F1 Back at Base podcast. Sarah, Holly, great to have you here. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
It's a little earlier for me than it is for you all, but we had a good race this weekend. I would love for you guys to just give a little bit of a quick intro, your background, and for any of our listeners who might be a little bit more unfamiliar, but would love to just hear from you all before we dive in.
Sarah, over to you. You go
Goodness
first.
Me. Okay. Right. I've got pole position. Okay. Holly and I are the co-hosts of the F1 Back at Base podcast, which is on BBC Sounds and lots of other places, wherever you get your podcasts. But we have been working in F1. I've been working in F1 for over 15 years, which is really, really scary. Yes, that's what's happened. So I was a sports journalist, and then I've gone from football, athletics, and I've ended up in Formula One.
Okay, so my name is Holly Samos, and I am a broadcaster. And just going back to, when I got into F1, I was doing a kind of music radio show over here in the UK, and we were on Virgin Radio and Radio 1, BBC Radio 1, and we were talking a lot about F1 on a Monday morning because we all loved it on the show, and it was a breakfast show. And so I just used to really rave about F1 because my flatmate and I loved it so much when we were in our 20s. And I was lucky enough in my 30s for another broadcaster to say, would you like to actually be a pit lane reporter? Because I hear you talking about F1 so much. So I tried it and I ended up doing it full time for 5 years for the BBC. And it was just the best job because I loved the sport. I loved the traveling, the people within F1. And you know this, Tiggy, from meeting so many people as well. They're just so smart and nice and welcoming and you learn all the time. You know, I hung out with a lot of older journalists that were around back in the day in F1 when it was like crazy races. And they teach you so much. And it was just the most brilliant 5 years. And then towards the end of my 5 years of being a pit lane reporter, I got pregnant. I just remember it being in Singapore, walking down the pit lane, and I was 7 months pregnant, and it was really sweaty and humid, and all the mechanics like down the pit lane had chairs for me outside their garages. You know, so it was just the most brilliant sort of intro to motorsport. And then I did a little bit of Le Mans as well before that. And then Sarah and I hooked up a few years ago and started our F1 Back at Base podcast for the BBC. And it goes out on the Checkered Flag feed. So it's a sort of Formula One feed that goes off around the world that shows all the races. But then what Sarah and I make is a sort of special series going right behind the scenes of what goes on behind the races, what goes on in the factories, what goes on behind the drivers. And because we've been in the sport for so long, they're all very lovely and give us lots of access. And so we get lots of exclusivity. And we're two series down and working on a third.
We're two ladies that have fallen in love with with F1, which is brilliant.
Yes. Well, make that a third in me, but I've been around for much less long, one would say. But you all have been around the sport for quite some time, and I'm sure it's been amazing to see the growth and the explosion. I think over in the US, we're just starting to get to that point where more and more people are watching. So I imagine it's been very cool for you all who've been in the sport for a long time to see that change and grow.
It's really interesting, Tiggy, because so much has happened over the years, and it happens very quickly as well. So when we first started coming to the States, I mean, I remember going to Indianapolis for races and they were always full. There was always a big grandstand. I think, Sarah, did you, I don't know whether you did Indy as well, but it was just, it wasn't what it is now. And I think what it is now is because of that Netflix explosion of Drive to Survive, which kind of opened up the sport. And you know, we had different owners come in, Bernie Eccleston sort of stood aside, and it just opened up. And then suddenly you have all these new fans. And when we first started working, Sarah, there were literally what, a handful of women in the
wow.
paddock, yeah. weren't there? And yeah. now there are so many more, and you see female mechanics, female engineers, you know, we've got lots of female drivers, but further down in different formulas. But it really has exploded. And as you say, in the States, I mean, it's just been phenomenal and it's great yeah. for the sport.
I mean, I was living in LA at one point in the dim and distant past now, and I had meetings with Fox and with other networks about to see if I could maybe work over there. And they were all like, no, the sports don't just translate at all. We're not interested in any of the sports that you're knowledgeable about. We're just interested in people that know about baseball and American football and ice hockey and basketball. And I was like, oh, well, okay, that's not me. But of course, now, as you say, Formula One has absolutely exploded in the US. So I'm sure yeah. it wouldn't have been as much of a problem for me now as it was then. And I remember yeah. sort of getting up early when I was living in LA to watch the races as well and doing my little website reports on them. And it's lovely to see how F1 has grown, especially in the States. I went to the first Austin Grand Prix, which I think was in 2012. And it was, I mean, the atmosphere was amazing even then for the first race, but I know it's really exploded now. And of course, a lot of the drivers like Lewis and Jenson Button, they always liked spending time in LA yeah. as well, I know, because no one recognized them there. And I don't know if that's still the case. I mean, a lot of the drivers still go over to LA, don't they, in the yes. winter. And I expect they're more recognizable now in the Netflix era than they used to be. But yeah, it's lovely to see. It's good to see everyone jumping on the F1.
Yeah. Well, train. Congrats on your career so far in the sport and the F1 Back at Base podcast, because I think it's incredible. And it's such a needed angle to go behind the scenes. I think Drive to Survive has been amazing, but it really showcased very select few stories. It's the drivers, it's the team principals, it's the major characters. But I think showing what's going on behind the scenes, the factories, you know, you have 1,000 people working on a single car. I think that's such a needed angle. So thank you.
And the lovely thing about podcasting, as you know, Tiggy, as well, because I know you have audio too, but we don't on Back at Base. And so we really are allowed into those areas of the factories where you're literally not allowed. During our first series, we were working with the Mercedes team up in Brackley, which is in an area kind of in the middle of England. And we came in to Brackley and we were basically working with them across the off season, across the winter. They were creating their new car for a couple of years ago. And we wanted to do some interviews in the wind tunnel. And everyone was a bit like, oh no, you can't really go in the wind tunnel. You know, we just kind of don't, that's not open to reporters and journalists. And we were like, yeah, but we're audio only. We're not going to show anything. You know, obviously you've got your IP and you've got all your secrets. Anyway, they eventually let us in. And even the guy from comms that was letting us in, his pass didn't work to get us into the wind tunnel. And he's like, I've never even been in here before. And then Sarah and I went in and it was the most brilliant time, wasn't it? We had the best afternoon just interviewing all the aero people and the people that lived literally within the wind tunnel, just talking about it all. And you realize how much, I think that's why our idea stemmed, was really you saw the two drivers on telly racing, but there's 1,000 people behind them making them who they are today, you know, and putting it all together. And it's so intricate and detailed. And it was just that sort of hugeness of it, really, that we just thought we have to try and tell that story. And it's so good on audio because you can get into places that other people aren't allowed to get into.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been so fun. I was actually at Brackley this past summer and it felt like walking into Langley, like the CIA headquarters in the US. It's like felt very locked down, mysterious. And yet when you go in, there's so much collaboration and openness, and there's just this feeling of warmth. So it's kind of an interesting dichotomy in comparison, you know, sort of the outside versus the inside, because it is such a collaborative environment, yet from the outside, it is very locked down and protected. So that was very
cool.
And isn't
it clean as well?
Yes, so it's pretty clean. I was like, I could eat lunch off of this floor in the race bay. So great. Well, let's dive into the race. Maybe a quick, in case you missed it, for anyone who didn't watch the full weekend, but the weekend started with Oscar Piastri. I think he's added another home race to his docket of home races. He was honored with the Lorenzo Bandini Trophy, which is awarded annually to a driver in recognition of their achievements. And Oscar is a well-deserved awardee this year. But across the weekend, we had a clean 1-2 sweep from McLaren in all three practices. We had quite a long quali. There were two massive crashes, one from Yuki Tsunoda, one from Franco Colapinto, both in Q1. It was a tough one for the Italian fans with both Ferraris and also Kimi out in Q2. But Piastri had a very impressive pole with Max not far behind. And then for the race itself, a mix of one-stop, two-stop strategies. Max took it around the outside to Oscar on turn one and never really looked back. But there was a lot of action, a virtual safety car, full safety car, lots of passing and excitement up and down. But in the end, we had Max on top with then Lando and Oscar following behind. But Holly and Sarah, what were your overall thoughts on the race? What did you think of this weekend?
Well, I mean, it was a very, very exciting weekend. First of all, it was fantastic to be back in Europe. The European leg of the season, we get the motorhomes back, which is always great to see. We're back to an old school circuit. Mm-hmm. The teams are starting to bring through their next raft of major upgrades, which they hope are going to make some difference to their performance on track. Loads of fans here, of course, mainly in the Ferrari's Corso Rosso colours that they've made famous and claimed as their own. So it was, first of all, I just think it's really exciting to be back in Europe and at an old school circuit. And we had some old school racing, I think, this Sunday as well, definitely with Max Verstappen basically creating his own look off the line with that amazing move on Oscar Piastri. I've got a little friend with me here. Let me see if I can get him for you. This is someone that's in my office who's he's fallen off the wall, so you can't see him. But I think that Keke would be like super proud of that move by Max. That was something that Keke would like to have been involved in at turn one. So from that point of view, brilliant. Max created his own look, and Red Bull then executed the race to perfection, really. So from Red Bull's point of view, a great Sunday. From McLaren's point of view, yes, damage limitation with second and third, but I think that they will be going back to Woking and having a few questions about could we have managed this race differently, because obviously they let the win slip away. One of those races, isn't it? Plenty to go home and digest.
Yeah, I thought it was so interesting because, as you say, we're only 7 races in out of 24 this season. And coming back to Europe, we've got 3 in a row. We've got Monaco coming up and then Spain. You know, it's getting back to the motorhomes again. And as you say, the brilliant Imola. I mean, I don't know. Did they actually say whether Imola's going to carry on anymore?
They haven't yet.
Sure, they're hoping
an announcement at some point.
Okay, so you know, it'd be a real shame because I just think it's the most brilliant race, and I know it's not a Vegas and it's not a Miami, but it's such a lovely traditional race. And also, coming into the weekend, so many people were like, qualifying is so important, you can't overtake. We had loads of overtakes. It was brilliant. It was a really good race. And, you know, obviously you have the safety car, you had a virtual safety car, you have good luck and bad luck, you know, when it comes to pit stops. But for me, that sort of competition between Max at Red Bull and the two McLarens is just going to go on all season. Yes. And McLaren, as you say, Sarah, as well, they're so pure in their racing and their strategies, and they want to be fair. But Red Bull have got one number one driver, and that's who they're backing. Mm-hmm. And you kind of think, is it going to be like 2007 again? You know, is Max literally going to take the crown at the end of the season?
It's crazy.
Because the two McLarens are just taking points off each other. And it was really interesting towards the end of the race when Lando clearly had the faster tire after the safety car. And he kind of said very politely on the radio, you know, my tyres are only 4 laps old and Oscar's are really, really damaged.
He was so sweet on that radio message. I was like, oh my gosh, it's like my son asking me if he can go and play out late with his friends.
Do you mind? And you could tell there were so many fans back home saying, let him pass, let him just get past really quickly. Yeah. And then others kind of going, no, they're pure, let them race. And Andrea Stella, the team principal, actually said afterwards, you know, he did have the faster tyre, but if he can't get past Oscar by himself, then how's he going to get past Max? So, you know, that's their way of thinking. And obviously we spent, for our podcast, we spent a lot of time with McLaren last year. We did the last 10 races with them. And, you know, every team is different. There's only 10 teams at the moment this year, but they all have very different, they all want to win, but the way they go about it is actually quite different, which I love.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think what was good with the sort of tension between the two McLarens at the end of this race is I was literally gritting my teeth when Lando came to pass Oscar. I was like, because I was just like, please, please, please don't take each other out. Please don't let anything happen. It was close, but luckily they did leave each other enough room and nothing happened. And Zac Brown looked super cool on the pit wall, but they sort of got away with it without incident today, didn't they? There was no back and forth on the radio. It was just Lando with his little message about, oh, you know, I think I could maybe go and hunt down Max for the win. Because as you said, Holly, I've got he said he got the fresher tyres. But we didn't really have any of that back and forth on the team radio. And the move did happen cleanly. So again, there's no repercussions for McLaren, in that, as you say, they've stood by their philosophy of we let them race, and we'll, as long as they race cleanly and fairly, which is what we saw last year. So I think it'll be interesting to see whether we get any more meaty scenarios between the two McLarens as we get further into the season. Because I think we got away with it today and everyone was sort of going, phew, that was okay. But I think as the season goes on, we might start to feel a bit more nervous about watching them, because we had it after Monza, didn't we, last season in 2024, and that was part of our series that we dissected, Holly, didn't we? And so we'll wait and see what happens from here on out.
Oh, I think it's absolutely bound to happen. You have two incredibly talented, hungry drivers in the fastest car on the grid. There are going to be so many times, I think, where they're one and two and the person behind thinks they have a better chance or faster tires. And I'm curious, as we're on the topic, what you all think of McLaren's approach so far of not really having a number one driver and sort of just letting happen what happens. And I think in some cases we get lucky, like today, where there wasn't as much to do about the whole thing and not a back and forth on the radio. But I think other times we've seen that can end quite poorly and both drivers end up unhappy. What do you think this is a sustainable stance for them to take in not
choosing? It's a really interesting sport, isn't it, Tiggy? Because at the end of the day, you've got two championships going on in Formula One. You've got you've got the Constructors' Championship, which is the money, basically. That's what the team wants. That's what the 1,000 people back at base want. They want to win that Constructors. And that then depends on where you are in the pit lane the following year. You know, there's lots and lots of sort of advantages of winning the Constructors. But then you've got these two drivers that get the points for your Constructors, but then they're fighting against each other. They're rivals, but they work together as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think there is another sport like it where two people in the same team are rivals and competitors. And yet they have the same data and they have the same mechanics and the same team behind them. And it is a really interesting dichotomy, isn't it? Because, you know, you want the kind of pure racing, you want them to be able to race, but then you kind of think, but actually it's how are you going to win? Because mm-hmm. your two drivers are just going to take points off each other. And yeah. at the moment, you've got Red Bull in the constructors who are, what are they, third, I think, in the constructors yeah. at the moment. And Max has scored all those points pretty much.
Single-handedly.
They're third in the constructors, and that's one driver.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if they had two? But then can you have two Max Verstappens in a team? What would Red Bull do? You know, and that's the difference is that McLaren have got two really amazing drivers. But at some stage, I don't know, you know, when we spoke to Lando last year, towards the end of the year, when he was fighting for the Drivers' Championship against Max, and he said, I didn't lose it in Vegas. I lost mm-hmm. it at the beginning of the year yeah. when we weren't as competitive as we are now. And even though there are 24 races in a year, every single one really counts, but you've got to be perfect. And, you know, there's a lot of amazing brains trying to figure out the best path to go. And in all of the history of F1, and Sarah knows a lot more about the history than I do, but I don't think there's actually a right answer, is there?
Well, I mean, talking about the history of McLaren, they've always had this policy, haven't they, of not having a number one driver, even when they had Alan Prost and Ayrton Senna together, famously the most, you know, the most famous rivalry in F1 and certainly the most explosive. They still, Ron Dennis, who was the team principal at the time, still didn't say, right, Ayrton is number one or Alan is number one. I mean, Alan actually was the one that encouraged Ron Dennis to sign Ayrton Senna. So Alan was the number one, was the man at McLaren, and then he invited his biggest rival into the team, and we all know what happened from there on in. But the point I'm making, rather than going back into the history books, is that McLaren have historically had this standpoint that they won't name a number one driver. Now, I think that at the end of 2024 season, when Lando finished runner-up in the championship and looked like he was the, you know, on-form driver going into the winter, I think we all thought, didn't we, that, oh, Lando is going to be the number one driver going into 2025. And in the podcast, I spoke to Oscar Piastri in Abu Dhabi, and he said, well, the one thing that I need to do over the winter is to improve my qualifying. And that's exactly what he's done. That's exactly what he's done. And that's made such a big difference. Obviously, barring what happened at his home race in Australia, Oscar's been so consistent and yeah. so brilliant that it almost looks like he's slightly edging Lando, doesn't it, mm-hmm. in terms of what he brings to his all-round craft every race weekend. So I think McLaren are starting to get into this position, aren't they, where they've got these two brilliant young drivers who are evenly matched, and what are they going to do? And I think they will stick with that policy, you know, as you said, Holly, I think they will stick with that policy of
until it
becomes obvious, yeah, that there's yeah. this one is so far ahead in the points. But we've got such a long way to go in the season. It, you know, we followed McLaren, as you said, over the last 10 races of 2024. And even in that short space of time, the championships were still, you know, up and down, weren't they? There was still everything to play for, yeah. even though Max had led for the first, amassed a huge amount of points over the first seven races of 2024. So it's way too early, isn't it, to make yes. a call, but can't wait to watch and see what happens.
I mean, this time last year was just when McLaren was starting to perform and start yeah. to compete at the top. And so it's a good reminder of how early we still are in the season, but also to Lando's point, everything matters. Every race matters. Every point matters. You can lose the championship early in the season if you're not careful. So I think it's a tough balancing act for McLaren to try and hold, but we'll see what happens. I want to jump to maybe going back to Quali briefly, I know we touched on Yuki's accident, but I want to talk briefly about that because I think that was one of the more dangerous and insane crashes we've seen in a long time. And it's it a good scary. Reminder in the sport how razor thin we are to very real danger. And it's, I think, a really good reminder of how incredible technology like the Halo is. I think a lot of people messaged us after this on Instagram and Discord, just talking about how tough that was to see. And of course, thank God he was okay. He popped right out of the car, but that was a really hard moment to see this weekend and a rare one these days.
Yeah. And I mean, it is motorsport and it is dangerous. And we have got all this safety now, you know, thanks to so many people's work within the FIA and Jackie Stewart. And over the years after, you know, Jackie Stewart lost so many teammates and colleagues. But it's a hard one again, isn't it? Because the old style circuits with the gravel and, you know, not having those clean runoffs, I really enjoy. I think they're great. Yeah. But obviously that does come into it as well. But as you say, the cars nowadays, the safety structures, that, you know, the crash tests they go through, they are unbelievably safe. You know, there will always be a slight danger. And yeah, Yuki Tsunoda had a huge, huge crash, and the mechanics worked on his car until 2 a.m., until, you know, this morning before the race. And then for he came back, well, he got 10th, didn't he? So he got a point.
Yeah,
you
know, climbed back into the points.
And to fix the car in that time, again, you kind of, we talk about it so much in F1, you know, we talk about pit stops, changing tires on a car. And at the same time, you have to kind of stop and just think, that's really amazing. You can change four tires in 2 seconds. You know, I've tried it, you know, I've tried to, and it's really, really hard to do. And so it's all these kind of amazing things, you know, fixing the car and, you know, the car protecting him. He went off to the medical center, I think, but he was absolutely fine and fine to race. Yeah. You know, safety is good now. Thank God.
Yeah. Max alluded to that on the radio at the end of the race there, where he was really crediting the team for staying up all night and still managing to get 2 second pit stops. So incredible, incredible job. Another thing that happened in Quali, or the other crash, was Franco Colapinto. And he's someone we haven't talked about yet, but this was his big re-debut weekend back into the sport. What did you think of his performance? I know, obviously, Quali didn't go the way he wanted, and then he did get that one place grid penalty for a slight miscommunication for entering the fast lane of the pit lane before the session restart time. But yeah, he didn't score points. There were some team orders in there to let Gasly by, which he handled well. What did you think of his re-debut, and what do you think of the swap generally?
Well, I think that's, it's tough for both Jack Doohan and for Franco Colapinto, isn't it? Because I felt very sorry for Jack that he have 6 races and then you're kind of replaced. I feel that when you're a rookie, and Jack was a genuine rookie, wasn't he, in terms of this was his first season. He hadn't really done much racing in F1 before. Franco had obviously had the races with Williams last year. I think it's hard. You know, he's starting a new job. We all have to start a new job, and to sort of not be allowed to have a little longer on the learning curve, I thought that was a tricky situation for him. And so for Franco coming in, there's a lot of pressure for him as well. We heard a lot of talk in the media about it. He's just got 5 races to prove himself, to see if he gets the seat for the rest of the season. And then Flavio Briatore, who's the de facto team principal at Alpine now, was sort of saying, no, it's not 5 races. We'll just see how it, you know, how it goes generally. We're not setting a limit on it. The criteria is, he's got to go fast, he's got to score points, and he's not got to crash. That's what he was saying in Imola this weekend. And of course, Franco did have that big crash in qualifying. And I was listening to some of the commentary, and you sort of, I don't want to say, he has to be careful, doesn't he, that he's not going to get a reputation as a crasher, because he has had the the three crashes last year in Brazil when he crashed in qualifying in the race, and then Vegas when he crashed in qualifying. So it's difficult. If you're a driver coming in and the cars are expensive, Holly, we know that, and we know how much the teams, like we were talking about the Red Bull rebuild, it's a lot of time and effort and money for the teams. And with the smaller teams, the more crashes the drivers have, obviously, the more costly it is for them, literally more costly. So I think it's a bit unlucky for Franco. I think the team will give him a bit, obviously, will give him a bit more time. But yeah, he's got to try and stay out the wall. But it's a tough one to come back at, Imola, as you said, because it's a narrow track with lots of gravel, no runoff areas. So he was straight into the cauldron of competition here for sure. But he did, you know, did well in the race to come home, let's say. That sounds awful, doesn't it? I mean, that sounds awful. Oh, he did well to come home.
But he is quick, isn't he? That's the thing. And so many team principals say, you know, it's better to have a quick driver that makes mistakes than the other way around. So it is just a bit of, I don't know, work with him. I think it's hard for Alpine because I don't think they have the funds that maybe Mercedes had with Kimi Antonelli, where they kind of really, he drove a lot of old cars. He had an amazing program for Kimi to get up to scratch, to join the grid in 2024. And I don't think other new drivers in other teams have had that. And obviously we've got a lot of rookies this year because of what's happening next year in the sport with all the new regulations. So it's a really interesting time, but it is money. And as Sarah said, you know, every time you crash, that's a lot of money out of your out of your budget. And if you haven't got the money originally to do all the training to get your rookies up to scratch, they can't race F1 cars. A lot of people don't know that. You know, you can't, there's only something like three, I mean, next year it's slightly different because of the new regulations, but usually every year you have 3 days of testing in the current car for the year ahead, and that's it. You know, and you might have a new driver test at some point in the year, but it's very, very small testing that they can do in the actual F1 car. And I think a lot of people do think, you know, they're racing drivers, of course, they've been through all the different formula and all the different platforms. They should be able to just jump into an F1 car and be brilliant because obviously they're really quick. The thing is with Franco, I mean, he's massive back in South America. It's a huge market for Alpine. It's a huge market, you know, to have a driver with that much just adoration, and you know they've already put adverts out about him, and I mean it's really big for the team having him in that seat. So there's a whole commercial side as well. But yeah, the racing, it's tricky. I think even Kimi Antonelli said in his very first race for Mercedes, when it came to the weekend, he felt so prepared. He knew the team inside out. He's been under the Mercedes, under Toto's wing since the age of 12. Mm-hmm. You know, he knows everyone so well and being part of all those engineering meetings and everything. But he said it was so intense, that very first race, that it was intense from the minute he got to the paddock. And it's not usually like that in F2 or lower down formula, you know, and I just think it's such a massive step to F1 that it is tricky, but it's, you know, you're getting paid a lot of money. So you can't kind of go, oh, we'll give you a third of a season, you know, see how you do. You've got to be quick and you've got to take risks. I think one of the really interesting things, and I think Hadjar has done this, is that if you can just remove yourself from your crash or your incident or your bad bit of driving and just reset and go in again, that is just the making of champions. You know, that's a really important mental, it's that mental side, I think, for the drivers. And they're so young. I mean, you know, Kimi, all of those boys, they're 2 years older than my son. You know, it's just crazy.
They are so young, but confidence is such a big thing. And we've seen that even with tenured drivers sort of lose that confidence and then spiral downwards. I think a little bit about Checo last season, where if you just start to lose a little bit of that confidence, it can quickly go downhill. And it is really impressive to see the rookies be able to bounce back. I thought about that a little bit with Ollie Berman as well, who didn't have a great start to the season and then was able to come back. And you do love to see the resilience there. And I think Kimi's been an amazing talent. And I think it gets a little bit to the point of how different F2 and F1 can be, because Kimi didn't have the best results in F2, but he's far and away the best rookie on performance right now in F1. So I think it's been, I went to the premiere of The Seat in Miami, and Toto Wolff was there saying, Holly, sort of exactly what you said, I would rather have a driver that I have to tame than he used the word donkey that I can't accelerate. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. But the great thing that Kimi has is that he's not crashing the car. He unfortunately had to retire this race, but due to a technical failure. But yeah, maybe let's talk about Kimi this race, because this was his home race debut in Formula One. He brought his classmates. It was very sweet seeing all the pictures leading up to the weekend. And unfortunately, it was not the weekend he wanted, but it's the first, I think it's his first retirement so far this season. And so it's a bummer to see that. But I've been so impressed by Kimi, and I think podiums will be quick to come. He definitely seems to have the talent.
Yeah, no, he is. He's amazing. And so, you know, after his kind of debut in FP1 in Monza last year, where he did crash the car very quickly in front of his Italian fans, to come out of that and then to come back into the season. And a lot of people were like, oh, my gosh, have they made the right decision? You know, that Seat Netflix documentary is brilliant. Because he's so young, he's got an amazing family. As you say, this weekend, I mean, he lives like half an hour away from Imola, you know, Bologna. All of his classmates, he's still doing his exams, he's just passed his driving test, you know, all these funny little anecdotes coming from him. And his, you know, his granny or his nonna, she made lasagna for the whole team. Incredible. And delivered it into the paddock. And they were all, I was getting photographs, they were all eating his nonna's lasagna for 100 people in the race team. A lot of pressure. The fans love him. But the car wasn't great this weekend. You know, it wasn't what it has been for whatever reason, whether it was the tyres. There was obviously the new softest tyre there from Pirelli. It just wasn't great this weekend. George suffered all weekend. He sounded like he had technical problems at the rear of his car throughout the whole of Imola. And then, as you say, Kimi stopped on the side of the track anyway. But he'll bounce back and they'll get on top of it. But as Sarah was saying earlier, this European race was one where a lot of new parts, a lot of upgrades were brought to all the teams, pretty much. And, you know, Mercedes were one of those as well. So they'll get on top of it. But we're at the start of a triple header. Mm-hmm. We're going to Monaco next, which is, again, you know, it's all about qualifying.
Yeah.
But they do have that rule, don't they, this year, where they have to stop twice.
Yes.
They have to pit twice, which is going to be good. So that
I think
might
that will be a game changer, hopefully.
yeah. But no, I think Kimi, absolutely, you know, one to watch. He's really clever. I was at a party with them all over Christmas, and he can recall like his timed segments from races that he did, you know, 6 years ago. If you said to him, what was your qualifying in in Spain back in.
He knows every time. It's crazy.
He is so, he's just like this little data computer.
That's his party piece, isn't it? That is literally his party piece, Holly. So you were at a party with Kimi Antonelli and he literally did his party piece and told you all his lap times.
It's a pretty good party trick. I'm going to the Monaco Grand Prix this month and I'm beyond excited, but to really get the most out of it, I felt like I've needed to improve my French language. I've been using Rosetta Stone, which gives you the confidence to connect with locals and experience cultures more authentically. One of the hardest things can be perfecting pronunciation, but Rosetta Stone has built-in true accent speech recognition technology that provides real-time feedback, which has helped me sound much more natural. It's like having a personal language coach guiding your accent every step of the way. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Paddock Project listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. Has the last F1 race got your stress levels through the roof? It might actually not be Ferrari strategy or papaya rules. It might actually be your hormones. That's where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Just answer a few questions about what you're going through and where you're at in life. And the best part, after taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. I personally took the quiz, and one of the recommendations I got was to start Hormone Harmony, which helps with bloating, fatigue, weight gain, and more. And after adding it to my routine, I've definitely noticed a difference. So ready to start feeling like yourself again? Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code PADDOCKPROJECT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code PADDOCKPROJECT for 15% off today.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Well, let's talk about the other Italians. Obviously, for Ferrari, It was a bit of a disastrous Saturday, but they managed to have a much better Sunday. I know there was some frustration throughout the race with a lot of the back and forth and the strategies and Leclerc not having fresh tires to pit onto at the end there. But we had Hamilton climb all the way back to just off the podium in P4, and then Charles, who had to give that position back to Albon and ended in P6, which I think some people debated the call of that position swap. I think Ferrari were right to do that. I think that was better than a potential 5-second penalty there. And I did think Albon had the line, but maybe curious about your thoughts on that, and then curious about your thoughts on Ferrari more broadly this season. I think it's not been quite the season that they'd hoped, and especially Hamilton coming into the team new this year. I think he probably is wanting for more, but curious your thoughts on those things.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because at the end of last year, they were the second fastest team. They were brilliant. And obviously with Lewis going there, who is, you know, 7-time world champion, who's won the most races in history, the most brilliant driver, the GOAT, whatever people call him, he's amazing. And obviously everyone does want to drive for Ferrari. And I think because it was an evolution of the car, we all thought they're gonna start off great. And they really haven't. And Lewis said today after Imola, everywhere we have to get better. It's not just me. It's not just the setup. Everywhere in this team. I mean, that's a huge statement to say that everywhere needs to get better. You just wonder, you know, again, as we were saying earlier, the teams are run very differently, and it's even technically it's different brakes, different engine, all that for Lewis, but Leclerc's having just as much of an issue. And we don't see a lot of Fred Vasseur anymore. You know, he's not out there kind of, I haven't had seen an interview with him for a long time.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on behind the scenes. I think, you know, it was a good recovery, like you said, getting fourth and sixth. And Lewis said this was for the fans. But that's his best result in a Grand Prix this year, is fourth. But I think it was kind of, I don't know whether it was on merit. I think it was because of the safety cars, because of, you know, the strategies, the different, everyone was on different tires at different times. That's quite unusual.
Albon going into the gravel.
Ferrari are still waiting, aren't they, for their big major upgrade. It wasn't ready for Imola. It's still coming through, and that's, I think, a lot of repackaging around the rear of the car. I think it's a mechanical upgrade that they're working on something to do with the gearbox casing, I'm led to understand from reading around the subject. So they're still waiting for this major upgrade to the rear of the car that they hope is going to help them climb further up the grid. But, and a lot of people have been saying, why are they putting so much resource into this massive upgrade when, of course, we've got 2026 coming up and it will be a whole new car and all the new regulations then. So it's mm-hmm. really interesting to see, have Ferrari got something really big coming that they think is going to catapult them and get them back on to the levels of performance where, as Holly was saying, we saw them at the end of 2024. It's really interesting, isn't it? Because either they've got something coming that they think is going to really help Lewis and Charles get back on terms, or maybe they're just hoping for some, you know, it's always difficult to know, isn't it? But it is yeah. interesting that they have got this big upgrade in the pipeline, and hopefully we'll get to see it soon and we'll know whether, as Holly was saying, they can get back to where they were at the end of 2024 when yeah. they were really pushing McLaren hard for that constructor's title, which was good fun to watch.
Yeah, it's always hard hearing Lewis at the beginning of the race weekend talk about having to remind himself that he's a 7-time world champion and having struggles in the car and in the team, which, as you were saying, it's not just the car. So I hope that an upgrade will help a lot, but I also think there's a lot of other things that need to go right as well. They need to get things right on strategy calls and teamwork and all of that. So I think there's a lot to be improved, but I do hope an upgrade is the step in the right direction. So
I hope so. And as you say, like strategy, there have been a few question marks over Ferrari strategy calls.
And McLaren strategy. But
well, no, I didn't mean McLaren. I just meant Ferrari over the last few seasons. And Charles always seems to be on the receiving end of those, doesn't he? And he was, yeah. you know, on the receiving end of it again today when he just got unlucky with the timing of the stops again. And he was sort of saying, not again, but in slightly less polite language. And so, you know, as Holly says, it looks like holistically Ferrari have got to make some changes at Maranello. And but it's not easy. It's not easy. When you're Ferrari, the pressure is on you. The spotlight is on you. So yes. it's not easy. If you're not winning at Ferrari, you're in trouble, basically.
Yeah.
So it's tough.
Speaking of Ferrari, I really wonder how someone like Carlos Sainz is feeling right now. He has outqualified his Ferrari replacement, Lewis Hamilton, I think 4 races in a row now. And Williams is just looking incredible. I mean, we talked a little bit about Alex Albon, but Carlos too seems to be finding his stride in a new car with a new power unit, one that he's never used in his entire Formula One career. So I've been incredibly impressed by Williams, and some of our listeners and I have been joking about how Williams may very well be the new McLaren. I think they could come in 2026, and hopefully with the investment, with the leadership of James Vowles, with 2 incredibly talented drivers, they could be hopefully stepping up to be fighting at the front. And we're starting to see hints of that. I mean, Albon has qualified or been in the points, I think, most race weekends so far this season, and I think it's been incredible to see him in P5 again this weekend, and again Carlos double points weekend for them. So yeah, Williams I think is a fun one to watch, and I'm excited for that to continue, I hope.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love it, and they're such a great team. You know, they were our last kind of privateer team, and then Dorrelton and James took over, and you know, James is great, he's done really well. We spent a lot of time at Grove the last couple of years for our podcast, and they were building, they were developing so much, you know, of the machinery and the processes and all the things that were happening at Mercedes when James Vowles was at Mercedes and when he moved across. And we spent a long time with what was the name of that guy, Sarah, that showed us
My favourite, Fred.
Yes.
Fred Rousseau, Chief Operations Officer, my number one.
He was just brilliant, and he just took us around the workshops, and he had such like joy, didn't he? But he knew how much work there was to do, and even expanding the factory, because you need more people, you need more machines, you need, and a lot of these machines they invent, they make them themselves, you know, because that's how you get faster. But it's a program, it's many years to go, you know, there's a few years ahead that they've still got to work on there. But I love the fact, like McLaren, when they were at the back and then suddenly they had a fast car, there are big jumps now. It's not like little increments anymore, you know. People can bring upgrades and suddenly you're more than a tenth faster. You're you know, could be four tenths faster. And whether you can figure out how the tires work, like McLaren have done with their rears, and all that is just so cool at the moment, because Williams have made a huge step. And as you said, Tiggy, oh my God, those two drivers, they're just ace, you know. And yeah, if they you can see they're on a bit of a roll. And so, you know, sometimes they say, yeah, you know, we did it in quali, but I don't know whether we'll be as fast in race pace. But they were there, you know, they came back with lots of points for the team. I mean, it's just fantastic how they've gone from, what were they, ninth last year, or yeah, you know, near the back.
They were ninth
instructors. Yeah. And now they're, you know, the top five. So,
and I do want to just give a little plug to Series 1 of F1 Back at Base, where we did follow Williams and Mercedes over the winter of 2023 going into 24. And as Holly says, we spent a lot of time at Grove, and that was James Vowell's first winter as the new team principal of Williams. And as Holly says, just to reiterate, James is really spearheading a renaissance at the team. That's what he wants to do, and we saw the groundwork of that being put into place. So if you want to go back and hear more about that, do go and listen to the podcast, Series 1 of F1 Back at Base.
They had a really chubby car, do you remember that? He kept saying his car was really heavy.
The problem was the 2024 car was overweight, and they were struggling to put the car on a diet. And that was what affected it last season. But we presume that the car has successfully dieted over the last winter, and that's why Williams are much better this year. But I think it's been great to see. I mean, we saw Carlos at the top of Q2 on Saturday, didn't we? He set the fastest time out of everyone.
Incredible.
And it's just really fun to see these things. And then Alex Albon in the race today, he came on the team radio at one point, and didn't he, sort of saying, oh no, you know, he's sort of getting a bit cross because he thought the team had got the strategy wrong, because
I think he was like, running in P3. Let's not be stupid now.
Let's not be silly. I think he was running in P3 or P4 at the time, and he hadn't yet been called into the pits. But then, of course, the timing worked out really well, didn't it, with the VSC, and he got to you know, have that really great run towards and as you say, ended up finishing well into the points again. I think it wasn't that his third, fifth place finish of the season. I think it was the third, fifth place finish of the season, which is really good for him.
Brilliant.
So something's going right at Williams this year, and we're really happy to see it, because everybody wants to see Williams do well again in F1, don't they? So, and also everyone loves the drivers. Alex and Carlos must be two of the most popular drivers in the paddock, I'd think. And it's really good to see, like you say, these little rays of sunshine coming from Sainz's car, because I think everyone did feel a bit sorry for him that with Lewis's arrival, you know, it would have to be Carlos that was making way. And let's hope he's, you know, found a happy home at Williams, and can go on and get a few more points in the bag for the Grove team this season. We love to see it.
Yes. Well, to wrap up, we always do an MVP of the race, an LVP of the race, and then predictions for the next race, which is already coming this weekend in Monaco. So for me, my MVP, I think it has to be Max Verstappen's turn one move. That was just one of the more daring things, and something it feels like only Max Verstappen can do. Just no fear, so late on the brakes, just around the outside, and then never looked back. I think he's doing things with that Red Bull, which is not the fastest car on the grid that really no one seems to be able to do. So that was an incredible move. And then the other maybe silly one for me is I loved the Barilla branding on the track. I think that was so fun. The pasta branding in Italy. Love to see that. So
I mean, the one place you don't need to have to advertise pasta is Italy, isn't it? And they put that somewhere where you maybe need to expand your market.
World food.
No, it is the world food. That's true. But
MVPs for you both?
I think as you say, I mean, I've got two actually, because Max is that first turn, second turn move at the brick beginning. I love it when you sit on your sofa and you kind of go, it's just like so brilliant. It was such a great move. And he really is a brilliant, brilliant driver. And, you know, Oscar did say afterwards, I just brake too early. You know, he knew, and he's got little hints of Max, I think, Oscar Piastri.
Definitely.
There's little hints of him in the way that he's learned so much, and he can change quite easily, as you said earlier in the podcast, over the winter. But Max, definitely. But I think my MVP was the Tifosi, the fans. They are so awesome. And just going to Italy, and if you can experience a race in Italy at either Monza or Imola, if it does come back onto the calendar, it's just one of the best experiences. And just seeing it's just like a countryside of fans. And yet you see all these pops of colour in, you know, different teams, different in the middle of all the red Ferrari. I mean, they're just so passionate. And it's such a, you know, like when the national anthem gets played at the beginning of at the end of the grid before the formation lap, it's just so moving. They love it so much, and that passion, I just think, yeah, the Tifosi,
it's a religion them. It's a religion,
yeah.
For them.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that you chose the Tifosi, Holly, as your most valuable player, because I didn't know whether to choose Alex Albon or to go for Lewis Hamilton, but I decided that I would go for Lewis as my MVP of the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, because, you know, it's easy to forget, isn't it, that they qualified outside the top 10. Aston Martin made that brilliant strategy call by whacking on the medium tyres, and they got through to Q1 and pushed out Ferrari. So, of mm-hmm. course, they lined up 11th and 12th on the grid, didn't they, the two Ferraris? And then to come surging through for the points and for Lewis to finish P4, I think he really had to work hard for that today. And it was his first home race for Ferrari in front of the Tifosi. It was his best result since moving to Ferrari. And he finished ahead of Charles Leclerc for the first time as Ferrari teammates. And I love the bit in the race where he made the pass, and the team came on, his race engineer came on and went, awesome, awesome work, Lewis. And he was like, yeah, no, but the tyres are still rubbish. So, you know, so it was like, even when he was being, you know, congratulated, he was still sort of like, oh, no, you know. Adding a little bit of extra drama for us all. So I think Lewis Hamilton's my MVP. I think he can be reasonably satisfied with P4 from P12 in front of that marvellous Tifosi, as Holly said. So
he was happy. He was happy. It's rare these days to hear Lewis happy on the radio. And yes, he was still complaining about the tires, but I think he was really happy at the end of that race. So
yeah, well, and so he should be. It was good.
Yes.
Good.
My least valuable player, a team you just mentioned, actually, Aston Martin. I think they had a wonderful Saturday, great qualifying, knocked both Ferraris out on the mediums, as you said, and then it just all sort of fell apart in the race, and you could hear Fernando Alonso's frustrated radio saying that he's the unluckiest driver in the world. This is torture.
I know.
And that was one of my favorite bits of the race, by the way. Like, I really I really wanted to talk about that. I'm the unluckiest driver in the world. And you're not. You're Fernando Alonso. Yeah. You are not the unluckiest driver in the world. Like, you know,
Aston Martin's
championships, you're brilliant, still in your 40s, but I love that. I love that line.
So funny. Yeah, Fernando Alonso has not had a great season so far, and Aston Martin in general looks like it's struggling a lot, but we've seen Lance Stroll outperform Fernando a couple of times, and Fernando Alonso a couple races ago was spinning on his own, and you're just sort of like, this man is a two-time world champion, and it's unfortunate to see it, but yeah, I think Aston Martin is definitely leaving a lot to be desired this season, and this race was, it felt like there were glimmers of hope on Saturday, and I was really happy for them and really happy to see it, and then it just didn't pull through for a variety of reasons, but
yeah,
that was
it's a shame. My LVP is a little bit left of center again. So I haven't gone for anyone specific, but my LVP is going to be the safety cars and the pit stops, because like you said, with Fernando, with Charles Leclerc, I mean, Charles Leclerc, you know, he was just like, this is unbelievable. I am so unlucky. And I just think it does come down to luck when a safety car comes out, virtual safety car, and whether you've just pitted or you can just pit. And they both worked beautifully for Max today. Not that he needed it, actually. He didn't need that good luck. But the guys that got the bad luck, who it just didn't work for, I did feel for.
I've gone for another random LVP. I always used to say when I was in the paddock all the time, I was like, please don't talk to me about tyres. Please, I just don't want to hear men talking about tyres. No, thank you. But I am going to talk about tyres because, you know, they are an important part of the game. So I'm going for the C6 soft tyre as my LVP. It's the first time we've seen the C6, the softest of the Pirelli's compounds. And it seemed to be causing a bit of confusion among the drivers, even among Pirelli themselves, that weren't sure why.
Too soft
wasn't doing what it was supposed to be doing. And we saw Aston Martin, we've mentioned it before, and George Russell going for the mediums in qualifying and deciding they'd had enough of the C6. We didn't see it at all in the race.
Yeah.
I'm just going for the LVP, and we're going to have to see what happens because they're going to have to come back at other races. Pirelli can't, the tyres are homologated now, so they can't change them. So,
yeah,
I'm going for a tyre. Why not go for that? Something different.
Just important bit. I love that. Okay, how about any Monaco predictions for this weekend?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it is all about qualifying Monaco, isn't it? And, you know, part of me thinks it's probably going to be, I don't think it's going to be Lando because he's having a problem with his Saturdays at the moment. I kind of want to go for someone like Lewis, but I don't know whether they'll be quick enough. But I just think you have to be so precise, don't you? And he knows that's the place so well. But as does Charles. It's a real tricky one. I hate being put on the spot.
we won't hold you to any of it. I might go back-to-back Charles Leclerc Monaco wins. That might be one of the hotter takes of all time. But I think, to your point, he knows the track incredibly well, the circuit incredibly well. So, and it's home. And I think they'll be wanting to come back. He'll be frustrated after this weekend, not getting that P5 or better. So I think Charles will come back raring to go.
I'm going to go for something different, which is good. So we've all got skin in the game, haven't we?
Go for Bortoleto.
No, I'm not going for Bortoleto or Colapinto, though I don't think he's going to crash this weekend in qualifying. So I'm think he's going to have a really good second race weekend back. I was going to go for McLaren. I don't think they've won in Monaco since 2008. I don't believe that's the case. And Oscar Piastri finished second last year, didn't he, to Charles. So I'm going to go for Oscar because Alain Prost does say I'm a fan of whatever the professor has to say, that it's all about psychology in Monaco. You've got to have that self-belief and the confidence when you're driving around there, especially in qualifying. And I just think Oscar seems to be in the zone when it comes to his mental strength and preparation at the minute. He seems to be like absolutely A1 for pole positions at the minute. So I'm going to go for Oscar Piastri, and my son is an Oscar Piastri fan. So that's another reason why I'm going for Oscar. And I hope I haven't jinxed anybody at all. with anything that I've said during this podcast.
Never, never. And we never hold people to their predictions, myself included. They're always wrong. So Holly, Sarah, thank you so much for joining and chatting about the race and everything else happening in this crazy sport.
Thank you so much. It's been a joy. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.